Welcome to episode 163 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jason, I'm here with Nick, and we've got an exciting guest episode today. So you notice that Marty is not with us. How are you going today, Nick?
Mate, I'm going well. Yeah, no, we've replaced Marty with someone just as special, I think. Maybe more special, depending on who you talk to, but no, it's okay. Look, we've got Marty on the bench, and we'll bring him back when we need to, mate. But we've got a special guest today in Daniel Breeze, good friend of mine, and also a business connection of both of ours. So, Dan, how are you, mate? Welcome to the Numbers Game.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Robbo. I'm very excited to be here. This is the culmination for me. I can die a happy man now knowing I've been on the Numbers Game. Very happy to be here.
Well, look, mate, this after 150 texts and, you know, about 180 phone calls, I just had to get you on. And I think Jace was doing the same.
The hassling finally paid off. I'm glad.
With a background like yours, I'm going to set the scene here a little bit and throw you to the first part, and you can unpack the background a little bit. So for those that are listening at home and going, well, who's Daniel Breeze and why have Jason Nick got him on the podcast and they're picking on him about, you know, harassing us? So at a high level, you know, early 2000s, you're listed on the Melbourne Football Club's list. You're a professional sportsman, AFL, childhood dream. You can unpack a little bit of that if you want to go back that far. You then got into real estate. You're with Ray White's. You then founded an epic multi-million dollar turnover suit clothing business with your mates. You're, you know, growing this big company up and down Melbourne, Sydney, marketing, operations, shop fronts, heaps going on there. And then from doing clothing, you went into event hire. From event hire, you went into digital agency offshoring, digital marketing, and then the offshoring business of AS White Global. Now, that is a huge 23-year background history snapshot in about 30 seconds to a minute. I'd like to throw to you to go, what part of that stands out to you? What do you want to unpack about who's Daniel Breeze and what's his background and why is he here today?
Well, yeah, so it's a long way back, 23 years. So, and as Nick mentioned, obviously, I started a business in the retail business back when Nick was in early days of starting, you know, his finance business. So it goes back a long, long way. You know, the football dream thing was pretty short-lived. Unfortunately, genetics injury didn't really play in my favor. And to be honest, looking back in hindsight, now that I'm not a lot more mature, but a little bit more mature than then. I'd like to think that I was probably one of those guys that was going to need a lot of luck to make it. And that clearly didn't eventuate. So that was pretty short-lived, but it did, you know, some valuable experience. And then I think at 23, you know, you're an expert in everything already, so you start a business, you know. So call it, you know, ignorance or naivety or whatever it was, but just being young, I think starting a business, you know, it was a hell of an experience, and I did that for the following 11 years. And as you mentioned, we grew and went interstate, and we had about 30 odd staff at one point or thereabouts. And whilst we're growing the top line constantly, you know, year on year, it was a real battle. I don't think any business is immune to that. You know, operational costs, all those things, marketing, sales, cash flow, all those challenges that any business faces. But after 11 years, I was tired. And I wanted to change. So I sold out, as you mentioned, started another business. And I think that was where, to add some meat to the bones, that was where I think my real learnings had come into it. One was coming out of that business, and the second was building another. And yep. And exiting the first business, I had no international staff whatsoever. In the second business, I said I'd build differently. And that is where we did access international staff to support the business. And after a few years, I exited that one much easier, pretty smooth, very nimble. And then I was fortunate then to sort of really become an advocate, particularly on the challenges of the first, more so than the successes of the second. I think the lessons of the first, hindsight's a wonderful thing. I would have built that business very, very differently had I had my time again. And fast forward to today, you know, we're 1700 staff, in ASW, supporting, you know, a whole range of industries. And that's been now sort of 7 years, and I sort of head up the growth side of that business. So yeah, it's been a hell of a ride. It's been good fun.
Awesome. And look, I've known you for most of that journey, and I've seen you go through all that, and it's been good to see you grow and you know, you've landed where you are now at AS White, which is, you know, an offshoring business, and we want to dig into that a little bit more. So maybe just give us a bit of a background on AS White, services you provide.
Yep.
Just, you know, the best summary you can give us. Yeah.
So the AS White is 13 years old. We have offices in the Philippines, Malaysia, Vietnam, and Thailand. And ultimately what that business does is help Australian businesses lift their onshore capability by accessing talent offshore by way of a dedicated remote team that's integrated into their onshore operations. And we do that by providing not just the talent aspect, but also the ecosystem and infrastructure for those businesses to grow. And in regards to the industries, look, as I mentioned earlier, there's about 1,700 staff, and we're fortunate that that's growing quite quickly. But the roles are really broad. We've got a bit of a stranglehold, but we've got a lot of clientele in that professional services space. Insurance is a big part of what we do. Accounting is a big part of what we do. Finance in general is a big part of what we do. So that they've been consistently strong markets for us. But then if we look across the whole gamut of our client portfolio, you know, there's manufacturers, there's retailers, there's construction and trade. So it's very, very agnostic by way of the kind of clients that we're helping and build teams for.
So I feel like offshoring's definitely exploded and come a long way, especially over the last couple of years when COVID happened. People went to remote working from home, dealing with people on a video screen or on a call, and all of a sudden you go, well, hang on a minute. If I've got team members at home here doing some of these jobs, maybe it doesn't really matter where they work. So I guess my next question from that leads into a bit of, have you seen or noticed any trends, especially in the last couple of years, where it's not just the businesses you used to work with that are doing this and you've got more people reaching out from different industries you may not have expected? And yeah, what trends are you seeing?
I think you nailed it, Robbo, and that is that the COVID experience was probably the big educator that helped this industry that I'm in, you know, because a lot of those businesses that were very traditional by nature or conservative by nature, particularly professional services, all of a sudden had an education in working distributed. So that was probably the biggest, you know, leap for us by way of interest. Add to that the talent shortage, and all of a sudden you sort of had a bit of a perfect storm, you know, happening for businesses like us, which is great. You know, so I think that as what we're seeing by way of trend, by way of the interest, I think we saw, if you look at historically, you know, offshoring, outsourcing, typically it's been for enterprise level type businesses doing very junior or entry level type work, admin type work.
Yep.
Whereas what we're now seeing now is an appetite, not just for that, but also mid-level qualified type talent that can even leverage more senior talent locally here. So that's been a real shift. Add to that more regulatory headaches and compliance onshore. I mean, you're seeing a lot on a more micro level, things like quality assurance and compliance type roles, you know, becoming more and more common and requested. And then looking again on a more micro level, things like cybersecurity, you know, which obviously is a huge thing lately on the back of, you know, some of the hacks that have happened locally here in Australia, that is also fueling a huge interest in trying to find talent as well.
You kept talking about talent there and access to talent. And if I think about our own business and the growth that we've had, you know, particularly the last 5 or 6 years, if we didn't have access to that offshore talent, we just wouldn't be able to grow at the rate that we have. So I think it's, yeah, I can definitely see how it's changed from, okay, offshore does the roles that we don't want to do. It's more about, I actually don't have access to enough people here to grow my business at the rate that I want to grow it at.
Yeah.
Second to that, there's the cost, you know, with offshore versus onshore and all the other things that come with hiring people in this country, you know.
Yeah.
And we won't go down a rabbit hole there, but if you give us some more specific examples on the types of roles. I know you mentioned sort of higher level.
Sure.
But, you know, apart from data entry and people on the end of phones, which is what I think most people would attach to the name offshore. Like, maybe give us some examples of some more high-level roles that are really becoming common.
So it's interesting. We kind of break it up into sorry, to your point earlier, Nick, about the talent piece and the cost piece. The cost, I think, has always been a driver. I don't think it's been the main driver in the last few years. I think people now go, well, look, we're going to save some money on this. That's always been the case. I think talent and scaling has been a major driver, particularly where, as the economy was booming so hard, you know, locally here, as far as market opportunity goes. As far as sort of what we're seeing overseas, but why the talent, you know, to your point, it's not so much the data entry work, but other types of talent. Specifically, we saw heaps of interest in technology. So again, COVID spurred that on. So we saw, you know, level one, level two, all of a sudden became level two and level three type engineers working within the IT infra space. Add to that, software developers have always been a big key and sort of running through our DNA in our business. We've got a large software development influence in our Vietnam location. And that again, kicked off over the last few years. In finance, paraplanning type talent in legal, we're doing a lot of paralegal type support. So I guess whereas probably 5 years ago, it was just legal administration, or basic VA type work within the legal space. So again, it's sort of lifting and elevating. Again, we talk about accounting, CPA, CA qualified accountants, which are incredibly difficult to find. But then, like anything that's got a qualification, and anyone who's any good at anything is ultimately working somewhere, is my assumption. So yeah, it's still tough.
So on the roles, and this is something I've always found interesting, and when I first met you, or when you first presented AS White in the different countries that you were in, I found it interesting how certain roles were more suited to certain countries, which is why you had numerous locations. So maybe just a little bit on what kind of person you would find in each country, or better suited to specific roles.
Yes, I mean, Vietnam, as I touched on earlier, has been huge for us from a technology software point of view. And I think, if I'm not mistaken at the moment, the last surveys that came out, the global surveys, the standard reports, Vietnam still ranks sort of in the top 10 as a desired location for software development talent. So it's, it's really strong, very high work ethic. And unfortunately, the secret's out. Everyone is descending on Vietnam, as a software location. If we look at places like the Philippines and Malaysia, you've got a 96% English literacy level. It's important, though, that for businesses who are looking at this, there's speaking English and then there's comprehending English, and there's different levels and layers to that. And I think good businesses can interpret the difference and what that means. But those locations provide an opportunity to Western businesses who need strong comm skills, not just written but also spoken. So anything that involves that internal stakeholder or type role, those two locations, Malaysia and the Philippines in particular, are both really strong. So we find that teams that are looking in the finance, accounting, insurance spaces in particular have got a lot of teams in those locations. We set up an IT hub in Malaysia, not so much for the software stuff, that's very much handled by our Vietnamese market, but Malaysia's been really strong for infra type support. So this is your level one, level two, level three, your cybersecurity analysts, these types. Malaysia's been such a strong hub for that. And then if you look at Thailand, again, quite a mature market by way of the talent available there, really strong by way of technology, similar to Vietnam, but then also really strong in creative, digital, marketing. Again, strong communication skills. So each location, to your point, Nick, has got, different strengths about, that businesses can then tap into. And we've got clients that almost treat it like the NBA draft. They simply just go to market and go, find me the best possible person for this job. We would hire anywhere in Australia if we could. So we're going to have the same approach. If they've got great comms, qualified, and meet our criteria, then we're open. So it gives, I guess, our clients a pretty big net if they want to cast it a little wider if they wish.
Now, if we kind of take that approach, NBA draft, you've got Wemby on the cards. You know, people would throw any amount of money at getting Wemby, but only one team had the number one draft pick. So, you know, you mentioned CAs, CPAs, talking about what I know in the accounting industry and then, you know, applying this more broadly if it makes sense to. But, you know, with supply and demand, we've got a war on talent. If we want to hire talented people, or if we're trying to hire offshore in general, when you've talked about, you know, you guys have 700 plus employees, there's other, you know, people out there that have thousands of employees as well.
Yep.
So that this supply demand idea means that are prices going up? I mean, is it still a cheaper option compared to hiring somebody here in Australia if they're available versus hiring someone at any of the locations you've talked about? Is it still cheaper, or wages just going up so much now that it's not as much of a viable option anymore?
The short answer to that question is that yes, it's still very viable. The longer answer is cost saving wise, locally here versus offshore, and let's just say broadly, given there's a lot of locations that we operate in, I'd say that the difference between local and overseas is somewhere between 50% and up to, I won't say 70% anymore, because I just think the global demand has probably shrunk that a little bit, but probably still somewhere over 60s. You know, scratching 70, depending on what role.
At worst case, if I've got a 100K role here, it's probably costing me 50K to fill it somewhere else.
Yep.
But then as an accountant, my brain's going payroll tax, superannuation, work cover, other insurances, a desk, a computer, a this, a that, lunch on a Friday, beers after work Friday. So all of a sudden my accounting brain's kind of ticking beyond just the 50% discount.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And there's the other piece in all of that is the problem. And what I mean by that, is just that, do you want to own the problem? And that I think is where the peace of mind is in a lot of the clients is, look, probably good hire locally, but they like the idea of being able to just leverage specialists in our instance, HR and talent and IT and all that. It's all there ready to go. Their ecosystem's ready to go. They just need to find the really good people to plug it into that ecosystem. So, all those things that you mentioned, Jase, I think businesses often underestimate what an FTE costs. Obviously, yourself coming from the accounting world, you know, is very different. But those that perhaps are just running their own business, maybe a solo contractor who's running any kind of construction type business, probably don't really understand what their FTE costs are. The numbers that we look at tend to suggest that it's about 25% on top of, you know, your base salary. You know, so if you're looking at you're 10% in the super straight away, there's another 10 to 15% in all those other costs that you mentioned, internal HR, IT, payroll, office, all those things. Yeah, adds up pretty quick.
When you say it like that, 25% on top of salary, like all of a sudden as a business owner, even I sat there going, oh, geez, that's a big number. And then as you unpacked it, I was like, you know what? That's pretty bang on.
It climbs pretty quick, particularly with the office space and all the rest of it. If you're a business that's outgrowing your office and you're needing new office space, then you all of a sudden start crunching the figures on your square meter rate, and you start realizing pretty quickly that it's not an easy exercise to grow. So, but look, our belief is that the clients that we have a really great ratio, a great mix, whereby the international team is purely there to supplement and support them, rather than, and to leverage them, rather than to replace them. You know, so we see this as a model whereby businesses tap into this in order to lift their organizational capability, rather than to replace talent they've got existingly. So it's about keeping them to do more, I guess.
Yeah, with our business, I can attest to that, because we've used the offshore piece as a way to lift what the roles onshore look like. So, you know, our onshore team now have more time available. They're working on more high-level tasks because they've got support over there. So can definitely attest to that. We're talking about the benefits, and the two main ones that we've already discussed are the ability to scale and access to talent. There's obviously the cost piece. But something you mentioned then was the problem and not having to deal with the problem.
Yeah.
So I think for a lot of people, they wouldn't understand what AS-wide actually does. So obviously you supply the staff.
Yep.
But as far as managing staff, hiring, firing, that's what I'd say is the problem. And I think that's what you were referring to. So maybe a little bit about that solution versus, he's a staff member for you. But talk us through the day-to-day, providing the infrastructure. What does all that look like?
The model that we provide is probably a little bit unique when we look at it more broadly in the world that we're in, and which is BPO or outsource providers and what have you. And what does that mean? It really means that it's an integrated approach in the sense that, Nick, in your case, the client is very much the final decision maker in regards to the hiring process, and candidates have to follow your local onshore interview process in order for you to be comfortable in making an offer. Now, in the instance where you would, ASY obviously then go ahead and manage the employment contract with that employee on behalf of that client. And providers will tend to offer, I guess, a different layer or level of service in between that. Some will simply just provide and manage the employment contract, whilst others will do managed services, which is, as I touched on, the offices and HR and what have you. But to your point, Nick, managing the problem piece, I think where good providers start to differentiate themselves from the others and managing the problem is, to begin with, is setting up framework and structure, hopefully to see success. So that starts with things like setting up KPIs and goal setting within a software tool that businesses can track and see how staff actually are performing, because managing people isn't easy. I think we assume that growing is just going to be a piece of cake and plug and play. I think locally or offshore, internationally, I think is hard. So where we come in is setting up structured evaluations and performance reviews, helping manage the salary review process. Kind of, I guess the analogy I often use is sitting co-pilot. It's your plane, but we're there telling you where to go and how to do it. We're not there necessarily to tell a business how to manage their tasks, because each of our clients knows how to run their day-to-day processes. But we are there to help them support and grow their team. So in the instance whereby perhaps a team member isn't performing well, we've got HR managers, we've got account managers who step in, set the framework up and ensure that that's managed effectively to improve, or who knows, potentially find an alternative solution. So, which I think that a lot of businesses who are going down this path don't want to have to navigate that kind of headache onshore, let alone internationally. So they want to have someone there with a nuanced handling as to how to manage that.
Yep.
I think that gives some peace of mind.
Having these conversations, I mean, we've mucked around with offshore teams before and, got it wrong over the years and need to revisit how to get it right. And it's one of those things that we only started to really consider as we got to be what I would consider a bigger business. We're talking 20 plus employees. As you touched on, started running out of office space, started trying to find who are we hiring next, how are they going to work, where are we going to put them in the team. What would you say to the idea that, offshoring's only for bigger businesses?
I think that was probably the case once upon a time, Joe. So I reckon that would have been, ultimately, that would have been how businesses operated, particularly the US, who drove us a long time ago. I think now that the biggest shift has been technology. We can connect seamlessly now. To be perfectly honest, I've been doing this now for 7 years. I don't know how businesses did this 20 years ago, but it was still somehow commercially viable to do it via fax machine. How? I have no idea. But then, so the technology piece has changed who can access it. What I will say, the model that we provide, and I think the other thing is that for every great story that's out there, like anything, it's like the old used car sales type approach, is that there's 100 bad stories.
Yeah.
And I think the reasons for that is often, which I learned, because I steered away from this in my own business ownership early days. And I think the reason for that is the model's not the right fit for the client. And I think understanding which client it won't work for is equally as important as which clients it will, knowing who your ideal client profile is and who isn't. And in this model in particular, to get to the point, Jase, I think that offshoring is really good where the requirement is a full-time dedicated employee. And where it's not a good fit is where you've got someone who's sitting there scratching their backside for 2 or 3 days and not being productive and not being engaged and what have you. And the difference with that is typically for an outsourcing model. Outsourcing where you're simply engaging with a business rather than the person doing the work, and that business can delegate that task down to the anonymous team and it comes back via an intermediary and then back to you. On those sort of flex seasonal type work requirements, I don't recommend offshoring. I think you're better off engaging on a contract base or an SLA type thing on a short project type need, as opposed to an offshoring dedicated employee model where someone lives and breathes your brand. So I think that, to answer your question, I think that it's accessible to any business, but I think that there's grey area within that as to which model potentially is the right fit, which is important. You know, so for us, it's about we don't touch the part-time stuff. We'll only support businesses where we know that we can ensure that that person at the other end is going to be living and breathing the client brand with them and part of their team.
Yeah. So is that part of the process then, when somebody picks up the phone, talks to you, says, I want to place a team member, I want to hire, part of the check there is to make sure they're structured correctly, they've got systems and processes, they've got enough work to give to the employee you're going to hire, so that's not a waste of their time or your time. So there's a bit of work involved in.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, so we probably see, and at that point, we probably only see half the people come through that first check because they're just not at a position where they're going to be able to make it really successful for them. And we realized a long time ago that that was also an enormous cost to our business, is taking on that opportunity and knowing that perhaps it wasn't the right fit. So now, and that just comes with business maturity and as you get better at what you do and what you know. But I think that, you know, understanding where you can help has made a really big difference to this. So, and then for those that perhaps aren't a good fit for us, then we'll tend to, you know, recommend other providers that might be a better solution for them.
Yeah, it's a good point. And you really, we've learned this ourselves from getting it wrong twice before we got it right. But you really have to understand your own business and what you want out of the service. You know, you mentioned outsourcing versus offshoring. And not only do you need to understand what you want out of the service, but you need to be all in. And I think that's where we went wrong. We weren't 100% convinced on the idea. We didn't understand what we needed to do to make the service work. So I think, again, talking about AS White is, you know how to make sure that this works. And it's not just about your business being AS White. It's also about innovate. It's also about future advisory. You know, what are we doing and what are our plans to make sure this works and to make sure that offshoring is for us so we give it every opportunity to work, you know. Instead, I think what a lot of people do is they do it for a month or two. It's not perfect and they thought it was going to be perfect and they say it's all too hard and they just walk away. I hear that a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting when we speak to businesses who are going down this path, I'll ask them, you know, if they've had experience before with, you know, sort of offshoring or what have you, and they'll say that they've, you know, had a team member didn't work out, they had them for 12 months and then they've left and they didn't go back to, you know, replacing that person. And I said, okay, it was a reason for that. Oh, it was pretty hard and challenging. And then meanwhile, they've gone through three people locally in the same time frame in the turnover piece. I don't think this is, it's not easy. And then that's the thing to your point, Nick. I think if you're going to go into anything, John McGrath has a great quote in his book that basically says, if you knew you couldn't fail, what would you do? And I think that that mentality of just going all in and ensuring that you do everything you can to make it work bears, you know, great fruit. You know, so I think that we're really fortunate that the clients have got, you guys included, are really invested in and value their team. I think when it's treated like anything, you're managing people effectively. That's what this is. If staff aren't silly, they know when they're not necessarily feeling like they're part of something or being treated perhaps in a different way, whether that's locally or offshore, internationally. So then I think that if you're all in and you manage process and you know, to your point, Nick, earlier, knowing what it is that you want to get out of it, it's not always about, I think sometimes we think it's about saving money. Some businesses just want to alleviate the headache, you know, of onshore. And the other thing that you touched on before, which I think, again, businesses underestimate, is by taking some of that arduous administrational burden off people, the other thing they're doing is they're giving greater job fulfillment to their local staff. So all of a sudden, the things that drive them nuts or they don't really enjoy or aren't dollar productive, that's no longer their responsibility, which means that just by going home or waking up, they're not doing all the things they hate doing. They're doing the things that they love doing, which means that they're going to stay there longer. And I think that's a very hard thing to quantify, you know, because you're doing that over a really long period of time because you're looking at your staff retention then locally. And I think the other thing is that people often assume that there's a really high turnover offshore, but in staff. But the reality is if you're hiring really good people, creating a really great culture, giving great benefits, these staff will look at these roles as long-term career opportunities. Mm. And that often is also underestimated because unfortunately, we're used to thinking that this is high churn and who's doing the work today will change tomorrow and vote. And that's not this particular model.
The great man Marty sent through a question that we get to bring. We'll always like to include Marty in some way, shape or form where we can. Good old Marty. So his question was around the idea of the risk in the model. I mean, times are changing. You know, AI is a buzzword that's getting thrown around. And with the business model of offshoring, what do you see as the biggest risk in the business model from a business perspective? And, you know, what are you guys foreseeing in the future?
I mean, thankfully, we survived the COVID period. I mean, we had a few bits of bark knocked off our elbows and knees, but we came through that pretty unscathed overall and we grew. I think we were lucky. So that was a real good litmus test for us by way of our business resilience and our business continuity plan. So, you know, we were lucky that, as I mentioned earlier, our client portfolio is really diverse and really broad. So, and again, professional services, you know, if anything went the other way, it went up over that period. So I think, from a business risk point of view, we've been fortunate that the clients that we have also been very resilient over the last few years. I'd say a business risk, we've identified one of them, which was growing with the wrong businesses that perhaps weren't ready for this. So that I think, was something that we made a really conscious effort on at the front end to understand, well, who is a good fit and who isn't a good fit and make a decision there as to not have to sweep up the mess in 6 months or 12 months down the track. But then, and you touched on it before, Jace, I mean, AI is coming. It is already here. I don't necessarily see that as being a huge risk for us right now. I think that one of the things that we are seeing is behind every AI capability is someone from a quality assurance or what have you, making sure that plagiarism and all those other things aren't necessarily at play. And yeah. I mean, people often forget that, you know, with OpenAI, you know, the business, the ChatGPT and what have you, they forget there's 1,000 people in the Philippines behind that engine doing the work. Yeah. You know, so I think people in general are always going to be a necessity. I think what we'll see is a shift from what they're currently doing to different type roles. Outside of that, I mean, more broadly, which I think affects everyone and we aren't unique to that, is just what happens in the geopolitical space and, you know, whether the US gets a bit cranky or whoever and decides to invade somewhere or what have you. Yep. But then again, I think we'd all be in the same, same boat there.
Yeah. So, global problems.
Yeah. Probably got bigger problems.
Than
worrying about our offshore teams. Just one final question from me. If people, and you probably come up against this, but if someone's sitting there and saying, look, offshoring's not for us, can't see how that would fit into our business, what's the one thing you'd say to someone? And I'm more thinking about small business people that might have four or five people in their business. Yeah, we're not big enough and it doesn't really suit us. What would you say to those people?
Well, I think that, I mean, for one, it'd be understanding what is it perhaps within it that they've got the most apprehension about. So that'd be one. Just the sales guy in me wants to know what it is, the trigger within the model that's not perhaps where their apprehension is. Deeper than that, I think that it's really hard to sell a solution to someone who doesn't want to be sold to, for one, you know. So that's the other. So my job, I don't see, is necessarily one of convincing people that it's going to work for them. Once upon a time, and now we're seeing it again, the business that is getting up, going overseas, and checking out the infrastructure firsthand, which I love seeing and hearing, you know, that people are getting up, going over and visiting the offices, which I know you've done yourself, Nick, in the past. For an SME or a small business of five staff, they're probably not going to do that, to be perfectly honest. So I think that we all think, and I'm no different, we all think that we're a bit special, that our business is a bit special, our process is unique, and what we do is different. And the reality is that more often than not, the differences aren't quantum and they can be learned or trained pretty easily. So my answer to that, mate, is I usually just connect them up with people who are already doing it And and my view is, if they can do it, why can't I? You know, so I think that if I have those conversations with people who are doing similar type work and similar type industries, and most businesses are pretty proud of their team and pretty happy to share. That's one of the things I've really enjoyed, is everyone's really happy to share how to get success. And failing that, then there's no helping. I can't help them any further than that. That's all we can do, you know. But yeah, it's an eye opener.
Couple of things I'll just quickly talk to. Yes, have been over there, and that's one of the things that's blown me away with offshore, is just the level of infrastructure over there and the offices, and just a fantastic environment. And I think we've moved on from thinking, you know, though it's like a sweatshop, inverted commas, but it's it's just brilliant, the offices over there, and the culture, and you can just see it when you walk through, that people want to be there. And your other comment, and something I think you do really well, is you do connect your own clients. I've definitely been part of that, to learn off each other. So I've found that really, really helpful as well. So yeah, I think if people are thinking about it, then yeah, talk to other people that are doing it. And if I knew some of the things I know now, when I did it originally, I would have done a lot of things different. So I think the more that you can educate yourself and talk to people that have already been down the road, is huge. And, you know, you've got the ability to do that through your network, through your existing clients, which is great.
Yeah, as well said. Yeah, I think that I think typically Australian businesses like to feel and touch things before they believe it's there. You know, and that's just our culture, our way of doing things. It was the same experience for myself going over and seeing it. I kind of came back saying, you've got to go and check this out. You know, it's a mind blow. So, but yeah, look, it's the opportunity there, understanding which model is right for which business, and researching it, is something well worthwhile, I think, for any business.
So then on that, Breezy, I would like to know, for our, you know, numbers game, we've got loyal listeners, they come back every week. You know, what I believe is a part of what keeps Nick, Marty and I doing this is approachable, easy to understand. You know, we're not talking shit. We're just kind of unpacking things as we see it in a way people can understand. Now, you're a pretty easy guy to talk to. I've always enjoyed our combos over the years. So for our listeners who are sitting there going, I haven't explored this, maybe it's something I should look at, what's their way of learning more about you and ASW? Where do they go? What should they look at? And what are the next steps?
Probably LinkedIn would be the easiest one to get me. I'm not very good on the other social platforms, but I'd say, not that I'm good on LinkedIn either, by the way, but probably LinkedIn is probably the best channel to get me through, via just a message or what have you. And the other is, if people wanted to shoot through an inquiry to the website, you know, that'll eventually find its way to myself. One of those two ways, or just hassle Nick and yourself until one of you guys cough up my phone number.
Happy to help.
Would also work. But yeah, no, I'd welcome anybody who's got curiosity to reach out. I'm happy to give an impartial chat and see whether we can help them.
100%. Well, Daniel, we've enjoyed having you on the show today, mate. Very much an interesting conversation to unpack your world and the world of offshoring. I know every time we talk about it, I get more and more intrigued, and know that, you know, we need to pick up our conversation from where we left off. So if anything, you've already got a hot lead in me wanting to come and sit with you and continue talking. If you are interested in reaching out and you can't find Daniel Breeze on LinkedIn, send me an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au. Given all of the harassment that Nick and I've copped from Breezy about getting on here, we're happy to share his phone number out with you guys so you can get in touch. And look, until next time, I usually have to pass this over to Marty, but the pressure's going to be on Nick now. So until next time,
if you want it to be easy, call Breezy. Game over.